Hello, and welcome to the Changemakers podcast. I'm Dave Corlett, Business Director at the creative agency ShapeBuy, and in this series, I chat to leading marketers at what we call Changemaker Brands, businesses on a mission to change the world for the better through technology. What I want to find out is the role that creativity plays in helping them to communicate the benefits of their technology. Hopefully their insights, experience, and stories can help you supercharge your own creativity. Hey folks, how you doing? It's Dave Corlett here, host of the Changemakers podcast. And this is episode 3 of our Women in Creative Leadership specials. And as I said at the start of the last one, huge thank you to everybody for your feedback and your kind words on this series so far. Really heartening to know that it's being so well received, because as I said, it's something that we and I feel really, really passionate about. So it's actually something I'd like to revisit further down the line, chatting with more talented female individuals about their perspective and their experiences of tech from a marketing and creative point of view. So this is episode 3. So we've talked with Larissa from a marketing point of view and Jess from a creative services point of view. Lynn Coy is the chief brand officer at the SaaS firm OneFlow. And what she's done with the OneFlow brand is quite remarkable, to be honest. Her and her team have done an amazing job of making it look and feel quite unlike many other brands within the SaaS space. So the way that she shows up on LinkedIn is so admirable as well. So I really wanted to pick her brains on what it's like to be her in her position, her perspectives, her career to date, and her views of also being a non-Swedish resident as well. So she came to Sweden quite a long time ago, set herself up there, and has now built a life, a family, and a career for herself over there. So I really want to get her experiences of that as well. So all in all, a really wide-ranging and all-encompassing conversation, but a fascinating one. She's got some really, really amazing perspectives on creativity, on life in tech, on brand, and I really can't wait for you to hear them. So here we go. This is my chat with Lynn Coy, Chief Brand Officer at OneFlow. I hope you enjoy listening to it as much as I enjoyed chatting with Lynn. Okay, here we go. Hey, Lynn. Welcome to the Changemakers podcast. How are you doing today?
Hi, Dave. I'm doing really well. Yourself?
Very good, very good. Thank you. So this is a conversation I'm really, really excited to get into, part of our Women in Creative Leadership specials. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, well, there's a couple of reasons I wanted to talk to you. First of all, I've been really inspired by a lot of the content that you post on LinkedIn and the way that you talk about brand and creativity, first of all. But also because I've been really inspired by some of the things I've read and posted and talked to you as well about diversity and gender equality, underrepresented backgrounds too. So I'd love to dive into all of that with you in this chat, and I'm really, really excited to do so. But before we get into that, it'd be really good for our listeners to get a bit of an insight into your career so far. I believe you started out years ago as a copywriter. Now
yes.
You're a brand leader. How did that all come about?
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for your generous words about, you know, the content that we put out and I put out, and from, you know, my own perspective as well as from OneFlow. I started off my career as actually a co-founder to a creative agency, and I was a copywriter. And at that point, I was also, you know, wearing a lot of hats. There were, you know, a couple of people in the agency, just me and two others, a designer and a creative director. So you kind of have to do a lot of things, and you wear many hats. And throughout the journey of, you know, just getting clients to sign with us, to work with us, I realized that, you know, the thing that we were actually doing was to sell ideas. And in order for ideas to sell, copywriting has a lot to do with it. It has a lot to do with how you tell the story, the words that you use, because words can actually influence minds. And I think that has somehow taken me, you know, from, you know, I quit the agency and then I started working as a marketing assistant in a tech company. And my strong point has always been writing and telling the story, communications, you know. I don't want to work in an agency because I feel the need to like build the company, like to be part of the journey. And how do I build a company through my story selling skills? So I get to do a lot of things, you know, throughout my career, marketing assistant, analyst, you know, my kind of brand people are usually very analytical. I'm sure you agree to that. And and then I got into product marketing, because in tech, really what you're selling is the products. So you have to understand your product. You have to understand how you sell the product. What kind of words do you want to use to associate this new product with, you know? So it's a lot of copywriting, storytelling, combining with product, to now where my role as the chief brand officer of OneFlow, it's really to see how far we can push it, selling our products even further with just brand, with just storytelling, trying to get people to change their mind about how they work with contracts. Has a lot to do with, you know, content, education, inspiration, and motivational speech, that kind of stuff. So I'm really excited about OneFlow, just because it's we want to change the world, the way the world works with contracts, and I can now use the brand in a way that if I can help people to feel that, wow, it's, because our brand is not normal, I would say. It's kind of unique. You wouldn't expect like a rabbit, you know, if you go to a B2B tech company, software website. So I just want people to feel that it's okay. If, you know, you have the permission to change the way you work so that you can become happier. And it's just like exactly what OneFlow does with our technology as well. We really want to move the frictions that you work with contracts to something that is so smooth that the experience will feel like magic, and so you can feel free to be creative. And so in the end, I kind of feel like looking back, connecting the dots, it kind of matches. You know, I feel like I found this spot that allows me to grow as a person and also to, you know, be more creative.
We were just saying before the call, or I was just letting you know how much I admire the OneFlow brand. I think, as I said before, it's, and as you just alluded to there, you know, it doesn't necessarily feel like a technology business, because yes, there are a lot of rabbits, but also just that general kind of sense of not necessarily what the product does, or obviously, like, you know, there is a bit of that, but how it makes you feel, how it benefits you, how it improves your life. So I've got to say huge congrats to you and your team on that. I think you've done such a fantastic job. And I love the video, the video on your homepage as well. Just, it is magic. It's a magic video.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
What's a typical day like for you then as chief brand officer now?
Oh gosh.
If there is one.
I mean, yes, there is no typical day. I would say the majority of my time is really to make sure that, you know, our narratives stay the same and it doesn't get diluted, it doesn't get saturated, and also to ensure quality. Because what I see as brand is a competitive strategy for a business. And the fact that OneFlow is willing to invest in brands and is willing to recognize brand on the C-level executive table, that to me says a lot about, you know, our ambition to use it as a way to raise the barrier of entry to the space. Really, you know, brand is just one thing, but also it inspires pride and passion among our employees as well. Our staff is so proud to be working at OneFlow. We have candidates, you know, writing to us saying they just want to work at OneFlow. I don't care what job you give me. Because the thing is, we now have a narrative that allows us to be a bit wild and crazy and quirky. And people feel safe. You know, we create this safe space where you can be yourself. And we truly believe that when you can be yourself, that's when you will find your strengths, your superpowers, you know, the things that you love to do. So in a way, my typical day would be, I mean, I would say, like, I love to inspire people to think that way. You know, what can I help you to do in order for you to have that self-awareness? Can I create all the space for you so that it's free from all the frictions so that you can be yourself? Because I know that when you're yourself, you're able to achieve this creativity freedom, and then you're able to work wonders, as we said. And I just, yeah, it's the most amazing job in the world.
It really sounds like, as a leader, you have that vision of how you want to lead your teams, like you just mentioned. Have you always wanted to be a leader, or have you just climbed the ranks naturally?
No, I mean, leader, yes, like in the sense that, you know, I love to inspire a change in the culture, right? I love to spread ideas that allow us to change the culture for the better for my kids, you know? But as a manager, no, I don't like being a manager. It feels like something that is, you know, like a necessary evil for a company or business to be able to perform. Because ultimately, if everybody is so motivated and creative and they feel safe to do what they're best at and within the company, do you really need a manager then to like follow you up on things that you have to do from Monday to Friday every week? I mean, there are people, you read about my newsletter on 2%, and really,
yes.
I would say the majority of people, so 98%, they are not feeling exactly motivated, and that's why you need managers to manage them, you know, on a weekly basis. Why has that not performed? Why has that not done? But if you, the minority of this group of people in the world population, they are feeling completely free, completely, you know, safe in doing what they love to do, and are not afraid of taking brave moves or decisions on their own. And that's where you kind of, you don't need to manage those people because, and actually you don't want to because you want to set them free. And so in, to answer your question, really, I don't want to be a manager, but lead, yes, in a way of, you know, an inspiring, a source of inspiration. That's where I want to be.
That's really, really interesting. It's a really, really interesting point of view. And I think you're exactly right. And ultimately, I think that's, you know, leadership, and I'm keeping that slightly separate from management, like you said, but is about inspiring, you know, inspiring your teams, inspiring the people around you, and then they go and inspire other people around them, right? So that's really, really interesting point of view. Could we just possibly touch on, so kind of linked to that, I guess, but touching on diversity within the technology industry and how that done right can also inspire people, because everybody sees people like them operating within their teams and other teams within their organizations, within the industry as a whole. Where do you feel that that the tech industry as a whole is right now, as much of it as you're kind of aware of, is right now in terms of diversity and in particular kind of gender equality?
Yes. I mean, we're in one of the most diverse, open-minded country in the world, in Sweden. Oh yeah, of course, you're not in Stockholm. I just assume everybody is from Stockholm, Sweden. And tech company and SaaS industry is where I know the most of, among all the other industry. So really, my knowledge is based upon the SaaS tech industry in Scandinavia. And I still think, like, this is like the most modern or, you know, openly inclusive type of industry, as you can see. But, you know, in real life, it's not equal. You will always see more, of course, more male than females. And if you happen not to be straight, that's also a problem. We talk about a lot about that, you know, during this Pride Month. And we actually met a candidate who came to us during a job interview. And this is a true story. He was asking this question: how would you feel if I would paint my nails? What? I don't care. And the reason why he was asking was because he has been given the dirty look in another company, which is also a tech industry company in Sweden. So just the fact that people still have to ask those questions, and also me, I mean, I'm not Swedish. I came from Malaysia, moved to Sweden for 21 years ago. I actually live in Sweden more than the years I live in Malaysia. I still get the question, you know, why do you move here? How do you find about Sweden? Oh, come on, I don't even, you should ask me, how do I find Malaysia? Because I have no idea what's happening over there, but I'm all over here. But just because of the way you look, the way you sound, I have an accent. Even if I speak in Swedish, I have an accent, right? And I would never feel at home. And really, I don't want to feel at home because I'm a fluid person. I'm you know, I can move anywhere. And my identity shouldn't be connected to my gender, my hair color, who I love, because all that matters is your mindset. And if we can't see the potential of a human being based on their mindset, and we're being blocked by all these barriers that is, you know, external, and we have all these barriers based on the social norms that we have been educated with, consciously or unconsciously, right? Then we're not building a better future for our kids. I feel sorry for our kids then. I mean, we need to see past it, right? Like, close your eyes. Podcast is amazing because you only hear the voice, unless you have an accent, of course. But you can never guess how I look. You can't see my eyes. You can't see my nose, you know, that kind of stuff. You can't see how I dress. So that you eliminate a certain part of barrier. But still, you know, it's, I feel like we should practice just see that person by actively thinking about what kind of mindset is this person adopting? Is it a fixed mindset? Is it a growth mindset? Because we just want to work with the people with growth mindset, right? But that's super hard because we're humans and our brains are wired to evaluate and communicate with or source of information that is in front of our eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. And so in terms of when you're looking to hire and build your team, like you mentioned, the person you had in for an interview, do you look for that mindset, that open-minded nature? Is that kind of almost like a prerequisite these days in terms of somebody's mindset for you?
I would say a growth mindset. So someone who is not afraid to be wrong. Someone who's not afraid to be open about, you know, and be transparent about something that they don't know and ask for help. Someone who doesn't feel like they get judged just because of the questions they ask or the things they say. For us, the talents that will have the most fun future or the most successful future with OneClothes are the ones who met our core values. And the core values is really just the names. But really, when you meet any one of us at OneClothes, you will feel those values being, you know, wired in our DNA. And really, these are not just names that we just come up with and then you try to adapt to it. Again, this is an exercise of understanding your DNA and then try to put it into words, right? But the mindset I was talking about was really about someone who's not afraid to make bold decisions and not afraid to be wrong and learn from it. Someone who is not afraid to be geeky in what they love to do. Because have you read the book Daniel Pink about motivation? He said that motivation is about autonomy, mastery, and purpose. And those three things are so important for you to have this creativity freedom. And if we can provide an environment where you can feel like you have the autonomy, you have your mastery, and also a purpose. What's the purpose? Why do you want to work at OneClothes, right? And those three things are important for a person's motivation.
And in terms of, so just coming back to that diversity point, in terms of building a diverse team, I mean, obviously that's very important to you, but is that a challenge as well in terms of finding a team that not only is motivated and has the right mindset, but is also diverse enough to give you guys a really, really well-rounded, especially in brand where you know, rely, and marketing as a whole, really, where it relies on, on diversity of thought, it relies on diverse backgrounds. If you have too much of a homogenous team kind of spirit and ethos that only really comes from one point of view, then it's much more difficult to be creative. So is that a challenge for you?
I wouldn't say for the marketing team. It has been very diverse. I think we have people coming from all sorts of countries in our team, but engineers are the ones, and also female leaders in tech, engineers are the ones that I feel that is very difficult to recruit. If you really want to have diversity, right? And then you have to kind of go outside your borders. It's a shame that, you know, not many women would apply for a job. We're looking for VP engineering, for instance, or like engineering managers, and we don't get a lot of female candidates. Most of them are male. And of course, we look for talents, but also at the same time, we keep in mind that we want to have a diverse workforce. That's important. And then some people would say, well, that is unfair because it's kind of, you know, positive discrimination, but it's not because we're so underrepresented.
Mm. Yeah, completely. And just sticking with the conversation around gender in particular, I know you're a mum of two daughters. Would you want them to get into the tech industry? Do you feel like it's an industry that, as a female, they would feel valued in? If it was the same,
gosh.
I mean, obviously, we're probably talking a little bit further in the future now, but,
yes.
You know, I mean, but whether they were an engineer, whether they were a marketer.
Yes. So the way you frame it is interesting because I don't care, and I don't want them to care either, how people make them feel. I want them to change the world. I want them to make other people feel valued. And if, I mean, that's, I don't even know how to respond to that because I've always said to them, you control your own feelings. If someone else is making you feel undervalued, it's that person's problem, really. Something happened in their childhood that make them feel like they need someone else to feel undervalued. So really, they can be anything they want, but the most important thing is that they know that, you know, the sky's the limit. Your job is to create a better future for everybody. So whatever you need to do, whatever you would love to do, I will support them. And I would hate it for myself if they would start growing up feeling that their decisions are based on someone else's feelings. That would be a very strange, wrong world.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And just, you know, I hope one day that we get to a point where that's, you know, I wouldn't ever have to ask that question. We don't have to have, with the greatest respect in the world, we don't have to have Pride Month, we don't have to have International Women's Day, because there is no need to raise awareness of underrepresented communities, and because they're not underrepresented.
Yes.
But I think, as you touched on previously, you know, that at the moment that is the case. I mean, do you feel like those kind of events, as it were, are helpful, or do you feel like they're too easy an opportunity for, in some cases, some businesses to slap a rainbow logo on their LinkedIn profile and be done with it?
I know, and obviously you read our blog then. It's called this rainbow washing, really. I really feel that the only thing we can do as company, as person, human being, is to, you know, share your belief. And it doesn't have to be Pride Month to do that, but it's a great thing to do to raise awareness to a deeper level because, you know, now we are focusing on this month. But like you said, I wish we didn't have to have that. The problem is that as you see what happens in the U.S., you know, we're going a step back. So I really do feel that, you know, we will never get there because there's always this idiot who can just mind their own business, you know? But we will continue to fight and we will continue to change. And that's what we all can do, right?
In terms of bringing it back more to kind of sort of marketing and creativity, not even kind of tech, but the world that we operate in terms of brand and marketing. When you were rising through the ranks and when you were even earlier on in your career, did you have any mentors, or particularly female mentors or people that inspired you?
Yes, absolutely. There's this female colleague, and she actually a good friend now. She had taught me, you know, like in the beginning of my career, really, I was just this like new girl in Sweden. This is like 20 years ago, right? And I have this, also this culture from Asia that is a bit like, you know, well, don't speak too much against the authority, but I've always been like rebellious. And so she was the one who kind of helped me to add text into everything that I do. The challenge with women is that, you know, we tend to be very humble naturally, and no one asks us to do that. But we kind of, you know, minimize ourselves when promoting ourselves or like telling people what to do or like emails, you know, you kind of minimizing a lot and also making excuses about ourselves, you know, the things that we do, how we behave. In order to overcome that, she has taught me, like, every time you write something, every time you write an email to represent yourself, add text to it. Because then that will represent your true self. And I've always taken that piece of advice until today. Even though now I feel like I'm happy to boast about myself, right? I still do minimize and make excuses. I do, unconsciously. But then when I think second step, okay, add text, what would I say instead? So I don't have to apologize in advance. I don't have to say, sorry to interrupt you. I mean, you have the right to be there too. So it's really a mindset, like you have just have to train your brain because you were wired this way. We just have to retrain it and say, you're worth as much as the person next to you, right?
Absolutely. And is this something that you do now for people that you maybe mentor or lead?
Absolutely. Add text.
Do you do much mentoring?
I do, and no, I mean, like I said, I do mentoring to people who reach out to me on LinkedIn, for instance, and most of the time it's like unnatural. It's not because of the mentor purpose. Most of the time it's because someone reach out to me and say, hey, I have this challenge and I really like what you do, and I wonder if you can help me with that. And then they gave me this specific challenge about like how do I react to that project or that. And then in the end, when we talked, I found out that she's not even doing what she loves to do. And so we started this like conversation about self-discovery, awareness, you know, what is it that you like to do? What is it that make you feel like you're like the most amazing person in the world right now? Like you just own it. And if you can't find that, there is no way you're going to be successful in your project. And so in the end of the day, I do mentor, but really it's like indirectly. The same thing with my, you know, my direct reports when we have on one-on-one. It's always like, well, what is it that, why do you make that decision? Why? And maybe it is a way of coaching. I'm not sure. I haven't been to any coaching classes. But I feel that if you can get that person to question themselves, why, what is it that makes me feel so in the flow that I can do this forever? And if you can help people to find that, they will reach their greatest potential. And that's totally my mission of, you know, how with my kids as well, right? I want them to test things, what they love to do, make money, fine, but that shouldn't be like the main focus. Really, the main focus is to achieve that great potential that humans have in them, right? And to do that, I see the importance of asking these questions about yourself.
But I think that's a really, really interesting thing. By the sound of it, I don't think you really need to go to any coaching classes, to be honest. I think that style is perfect. You know, I've had mentors in the past, and I think the tendency with some of them is that they talk and you listen. But I think what you just mentioned there about starting with asking them a question and opening the floor up to them to be able to essentially answer, you know, to open up and then go from there. I think that sounds like a great approach, and I think one that I certainly could have benefited from. And I'm sure people that you have and that you mentor and that you coach feel exactly the same way. Could I bring the conversation round to a slightly different tone, which is, and again, this is Women in Creative Leadership Special, so the subject of creativity, which is the theme of this podcast throughout. is something I really, really wanted to talk to you about, because I think it was your last post on two percenters. Creativity is the shit. Boo. was the title. And I have to read this. But it's so, so eloquently written. It's so powerfully, that the argument is so powerfully put together. What does creativity mean to you, and why is it so valuable?
To me, creativity is simply a new way to solve a problem. I hate it when people try to connect creativity to something artistic or art, fine art, logo, website, kind of stuff. Really, it's about solving problems using creative ways. It's so important at OneFlow and in my position to allow that space for people to form new ideas. So there's this book, Technique of Producing Ideas, which I use all the time. The technique works. What you do is just to be really geeky about a certain problem that you're encountering right now. And super geeky. What I say is you would just go down the rabbit hole into that certain issues that you're encountering right now. And when you do that many, many, many times, you have actually learned about a lot of things, a lot of concepts, a lot of unnecessary knowledge. But because of that library of knowledge that you have in your subconscious mind, when you try to form a new idea, because idea is really the connection between two existing knowledge.
Yeah.
When you try to form the new ideas, you already have all this knowledge in your brain, and suddenly you would just let it go and you go for a theater, go out, walk with a dog. The connection will form. It's like your brain is meant to be creative. It is meant to be creative if you allow it to. And I love the process because I can feel my brain talking to me. And if you're stuck, right, what you do is just take a piece of paper and write whatever your brain is telling you to without any nonsense. It can be nonsense. And what's funny thing is that once you start doing that, you start having clarity. And when you have clarity, that's when your idea becomes so clear to you. And it's probably one of the most powerful creative ideas that you ever had, because now you have used all the knowledge that you have in your brain and you can grow to become creative. You can actually train to become more creative by allowing it to happen. But I think that the problem we have as human is that we don't allow it because we're so afraid of exposing the inside of our brain. Because we're so afraid, if someone sees inside my brain, they're going to see a lot of stuff you don't want them to see. So it's really exposing yourself, right? When you decide to become creative. All this fear of judgment, fear of, how would they think of me, is stopping us and human beings from achieving our greatest potential. Because I truly, truly believe that the reason why we're different from the monkeys is only 2%, and that 2% has to do with creativity.
Wow, what a brilliant answer.
Thanks, I don't know where I got that from.
I think you're completely, completely right. I think what holds a lot of people back from being creative is that judgment, but also it's convention as well, because creativity is unconventional. People don't always respond to unconventional ideas because by their very nature, they're strange and untried, untested, unseen before. And I think that risk that people will turn around and say, what is this? But actually, you're right. If you unshackle yourself from that mentality and actually think, well, what it is my idea, and it works because I believe in it, and it answers and it solves the problem. One thing on your technique, actually, do you find that? And this is something that my team and I talk about a lot, is the space between. So you might write down all of those thoughts. You might undertake an activity that fuels your brain and fuels that, and then leave it, let it percolate, just go and do something completely different. And then when you come back to it, something will have subconsciously formed around it while you were elsewhere. Is that something that you bring into that side of things as well?
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not saying it in the sense that you're exactly right. That's exactly the process. But I want people to also to understand that this is not just a one-off process. and it's not just like a process that you start out when you have a project. Really, there's like five different processes in my brain right now that I'm working on. And I just let it sink, you know what I mean? What I'm saying is that you're probably faced with a lot of problems during the day. And if you practice that process, you know, for each and every one of the projects that you want to solve, the answer may come to you in a different sequence. Do you see what I'm getting to?
Yeah,
like, don't see this as like, it's just
it's
a technique.
A start and a finish, yeah.
Exactly. This is ongoing all the time. And what makes it different, you know, if we want to train for creativity, that's exactly the exercise that I'm talking about. Every time you approach a problem, try to do that. And the more you do it, the more library you build in your mind and this palace of knowledge, and the faster you will get to idea in the end.
But the faster, but also, have you ever had it come to you in a completely unexpected time and place? You know, so you're kind of you might have been completely switched off, and there was times when I've got three boys, one aged 1, 3, and 5, and when the 3-year-old was really young, he was a terrible sleeper, and I used to get up, and it took a while to get him back to sleep, and my brain would be sort of semi whirring around at like 4 a.m, and all of a sudden it would be like, ah, the light bulb's gone, and I've just come up with a solution, but it was completely unexpected. But you're right. I feel like, not that I've specifically trained my brain in the way that you mentioned earlier, but I find that naturally happens over time if you have a lot of problems to solve, because like you said, you might switch off from the consciously, but subconsciously your brain doesn't. And I find that really fascinating.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I have a really strange routine because my two kids, they're turning 3 and 6 this year. And they're still sleeping in the same bed as I do. My fiance actually sleeps in the other bed, and we haven't, you know, shared the same bed for many, many years. And what happens is that I would put them to bed. It's like between 7 p.m. to 8, and then I would fall asleep with them because, you know, even though I try to keep myself up, it's not working. And it's just super cozy to fall asleep with them, right? And then I would automatically wake up at 1, and then I would work, because the thing is, or I would read my book or do my writing or do whatever I want to, because this is the only time I have that is for me. No one is there to like mommy, mommy, mommy. And that's when I find myself most creative, like early morning. And also maybe like between, like when I commute to work sometimes, like between 8 to 9, that's when it's just kind of poor. And that's why I really believe in discipline. I really believe in like seeing creativity as an exercise, like a training program. Because the more you do it, you're going to find this routine when your brain, you know when the idea is going to come. At least that is how I have felt. And the best time for me to write is either in the middle of the night or between 8 and 9. That's how I benefited from using that technique.
Yeah, yeah. What we're seeing now is obviously much more flexible working, not just in the sense of where people work, but also the hours that people work as well, which must be conducive to creativity, because, you know, a lot of the problems that we solve are work-related because that's our jobs. And quite often you just can't do that. You can't sit down between 11 and 12 and say, I've got an hour now, I'm going to be really creative. And then at 12, I'm going to stop and do something else, you know. Mm-hmm. Surely that is benefiting people as well.
Absolutely. I also believe in, of course, this creativity work while you are digesting it, that works the best when you're alone. I also believe in that meeting people physically, and when you collaborate to get all these brainstorming sessions, the best way to do it is face-to-face. And I think it's Adam Grant, also one of the influencers on LinkedIn. I think he's a psychologist, a work psychologist. So he talked about that, you know, it depends on what you want to achieve. Like, you want to achieve creativity. If you want to have a creative workshop, brainstorming workshop, that would be best to be in the same room, because what happens is that you have signals that your brain can process and receives that you can't through a Zoom meeting. But of course, like you said, if all of the ideas are out there and now it's time for us to go back and reflect, then of course, you know, remote works just as fine.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, Lee, we've been talking for a while now and I've loved every single minute of it. It's been absolutely fantastic.
Thank you, Dave.
But I've kept you for a while. I've taken up quite a lot of your day. I'd love to end on a note that we ask all of our guests, which is,
okay.
Is there a project or a campaign from your career that you're more proud of than any other?
Oh gosh, what a stupid question, right? Of course, the OneFlow brands. I mean, we went from like really just this white and green and purple tech company to this magic rabbits with pink space company with rainbow even in our slide presentation. I'm so proud of it because it's really setting the tone of how creativity can be used even in B2B tech industry.
Even in B2B tech. It can be done. It can be done. And you're doing it so well.
Oh, thank you. Well, thank you so much for making this conversation so pleasant and so inspiring too.
Well, look, I've been completely inspired as well. It's been a fantastic chat. Thank you so much. I'm sure our listeners are going to absolutely love it. Thanks, Ling. Take care.
Thank you, Dave.